Welcome to the next episode of Dot Game. In this episode, we're going to start preparations for an inventory / merchant store system that we're going to be building up. That's going to take over several episodes. So this one is really going to be about updating the way we're doing navigation so that we can path towards an NPC. And while we do that, we'll take a look at a couple of properties, layers, sorting layers, and tags. Sorting layers and tags we'll talk about briefly. Since they don't really have, they don't really apply to what we're going to be doing here, but the layers will. So, jumping in, I have the scene where we left off last on our navigation part two video, and it's still kind of pretty basic. We've got the merchant, and she can path around depending on where you click. Actually, it looks like I still have a bug in here, so we'll address that bug. You can see when I click, there's three position indicators. At some point, I lost my project, and it looked like I had written the wrong thing on my update method. So when I have input.getMouseButton down, what it's actually doing is it's triggering that, it looks like, three times, where we only want it to trigger it once. So we can change this by doing get, instead of getMouseButton, we'll change it to getMouseButton down, and it'll do just the one, should do just one check. Save it and come back, that should solve it. So now you can see we only have one position indicator popping up, which is what we want. So the problem with how we have this set up is, so the way that the check works is we're doing that physics raycast. And it's checking to see if it's hitting a collider, which we have sitting on the ground. But when we go to check the person, there's no collider, there's no way to even identify that this is an NPC, maybe we want different behavior than when we click on the ground. So that's the first thing that we're gonna end up building. And what we can do is we can work with Unity's layers. So if you go under Edit, Project Settings, and you see there's a whole bunch of stuff here, but we're gonna look at tags and layers. And you bring that up, there's a couple sections. So there's tags, sorting layers, and layers. So as I mentioned earlier, we're really not going to dive into tags or sorting layers because they don't really have a purpose right now, but to kind of briefly explain them. So tagging is pretty useful to basically use as a way to organize your objects. So let's say you have a bunch of NPCs and maybe they're organized by an armor NPC versus a weapon versus, I don't know, a random one. You could tag them as a way of grouping. Or if you had like a set of goblin enemies, you could tag it as a goblin. And then when you're traversing your hierarchy, your game objects, you could do some filtering to check the tags. Actual more practical usage of when I did this was when I was working on the AI in my game, and I had a bunch of NPCs driving through a section. I could check to see when I hit the player and do a conditional breakpoint only if the game object that went through had that particular tag on it. So it can be useful for both debugging and grouping and sorting a set of game objects. Now, sorting layers is really useful for when you're working with a bunch of sprites. So basically what you can do when you're working with sprites and you have your camera, what you'd end up doing to organize like background image versus like a foreground versus like the stuff in the middle is you can either scatter it by the transform of the object to space it out, or you can use sorting layers and then specify on the sprite the layer that it belongs to in order, the layer ordering that it belongs to in order to register it without having to set some weird transform stuff, transform positioning, I should say. So again, those two don't really apply for now, but the one that we will work with is the actual layers. So layers are super useful in a few different scenarios. The first is rendering what the camera can see. And so to show you that, we can set up a couple layers. So we'll set a ground layer, and then we're going to set an NPC layer. So we pull this. So if I click on this game tab, this is basically what my camera is rendering. I hop over to my camera, there's this thing called calling mask. And right now it's set to everything. But if I were to check, if I were to uncheck NPC, nothing's going to happen because I forgot to set my actual layer on my objects. I should probably do that. So if I click on merchant and I go to layer, and I set this to NPC, I'm going to change all the children below, you see that it disappears. It's still in my scene, but because we set the calling mask on the camera to not pick up the NPC, it dropped it. We were to check it again, it's going to appear. So very useful if you want to maybe isolate out some things from your camera for one reason or another. The other two scenarios that are pretty typical, so you can use it for lights to illuminate, to basically be selective about the parts that are illuminated. And then the third is in physics, raycasts. And you can use it to ignore colliders or create collisions. And that's the one that we're actually going to take advantage of. So I've set it for the merchant. I still need to set it for my ground in order for us to take advantage of this. So if I click on, let's see if I back up. So ground, you can see that it's selected. I change this layer to be ground. Now I basically have two. Everything else, so this is the NPC layer, this is the ground layer. Everything else is just assigned to the default layer, which is layer zero. So if I come into the project where we had the code that we had written originally, we have our physics raycast that's happening. So the first thing that we can do is do a debug.log, and we can just check to see what layer we're hitting. If we come over, so there's no filtering. This is literally just kind of raycasting and hitting anything that has a collider. So if I click the ground, we can see that it's registering as 8, which is the layer that we set it to. If I click on this this cave, which has a collider on it, but we never assigned a layer to it, we can see that it's actually registering as 0, which is the default layer. Now, where this comes in handy is we could do one of two approaches. We can either define in our raycast a filtering of layers, or we can let it hit whatever we want and then do a check with an if statement inside of it. So I'm going to actually combine both just for the sake of showing how you would do this. So before we actually do that, let me add a collider to my merchant. So when I click the merchant, nothing happens. I'll show you. We see that, well, I guess I should say we're seeing 8 because it's going right through it and hitting the ground. It's not registering that there's anything there. And that's because the merchant doesn't have a collider, which is required when you do raycasting. So it's a pretty simple fix. We'll just add a box collider. You can kind of see down below at her feet that one got added. And if I hit edit, you can see the boxes. So you have a choice. You can either kind of drag and position it, or you can just enter in these values, which is what I will do to position. And then here we go. So now there's a collider around it, and if we go and click, you can see that it registered 9. And 9 was the layer that we had assigned to the NPC. You can also see our character pathed up to it and completely and utterly invaded the personal space of our merchant, which is a behavior that we don't really want, right? We want the player to kind of walk up towards it, but stay at a healthy distance away from it. So we'll end up tackling that, and that's why we're going to do special logic inside of this raycast, because we want a different behavior. If we hit the ground, we want the player to walk up to exactly where we hit, but if we're hitting a merchant or an NPC, we want them to walk up to a point, to a distance away. And then we're actually also going to rotate the character to look at the NPC. So jumping back into the code, we're going to take a look at the first thing that I described, which is essentially adding a filtering value to our initial raycast. And you can do this by doing something called bit shifting. So the raycast function takes a bit mask. And so to shift, we basically would do, so it's int, we'll do, I guess, layer mask, and then 1, and then whatever layer that you want. So to start, we'll do ground, just to kind of, just to kind of describe or to show this a little bit. So jumping into this area. Oops. Here. Your mask. If I come over here, I hit play. If I click on the ground, we'll see that it gets reported out. If I click on the merchant, we'll see that the ground is still getting reported. I'm gonna collapse these. So you can see it's six times, but they're all in one. So no matter how many times I click that merchant, this is going up, but it's not triggering. That's because the filter is actually happening on just the layer. So the way that you can chain multiple layer masks is using the pipe. So, oops, we can essentially do that. And what that'll do is that'll say, okay, I wanna pick up layer 8 and layer 9, which is ground and NPC. So again, ground is showing. If I click on the NPC, we can see that that now registered. So we're filtering out both of those. So if we were to tack on and build up our colliders and our layers, this would let us at least filter down on those two. All right, so now we'll do the code for when we hit the other layer, which we can do an else statement because we know our other layer is going to be an NPC. Obviously, this has some flaws if you were to build on it a little bit more. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're still going to do that same move call with our navigation, but we're going to alter it a bit to bring our character in front. So we'll pull out the X. I do this in a really weird way, actually. For some reason, I was going to separate it out, but you don't really need to do that. I think I had started to code it one way and then changed it. So we can just do hit.point. And then do transform.forward times -4. Now, we don't need the new vector, actually. There we go. Let's drop this. That should be right, I think. We'll see in a second. But basically what we're doing is we're taking the point in which we hit, which we know would be the NPC, somewhere on the NPC, and then we're grabbing the forward rotation, or the forward position of the merchant, and then we're going to multiply it by -4 to bring our character out to stop it at a gap, essentially. We might have to increase this to, let's just increase it to 6. I feel like 4 might be still a little too close. And then let's do, let's just log that we clicked on the merchant. Spell today. All right, let's see if this works the way that I think it will work. All right, so we click on the ground, we see we're moving. Click on the merchant, we see that it logged that we clicked on the merchant and we pathed up to it. So good way to kind of watch the effects of this is if we were to stick another merchant out on the scene. So again, I hit Control D, bring her like right here to duplicate it out. Then we'll just kind of ping pong between these and see. So we're pathing up, we path to the side, we stop. And the same thing goes here. So this is good, but what we're kind of missing is really a rotation, right? Like what we want is two things to happen. We want to path up, or three things, I guess. We want to path up like we're doing, path at a distance so that we're not kind of invading our merchant's personal bubble. And then we actually want to rotate our character so that it's facing the merchant. And then the other thing that would be good is to have the merchant rotate back to facing the character. So if we happen to stop right here, the character would rotate, face the merchant, and then the merchant who, at the time when we kind of start to hook up the UI, we're gonna kind of zoom in and show a little dialogue that'll pop up that'll show like what the merchant has to sell. So when that happens, we also want the merchant to turn and face the character. Otherwise, you kind of just look like in some scenarios that you're talking to the back of the merchant, which isn't a great user experience. So we're gonna tackle in this video the first half, which is the navigation, which we've already done, but rotating our player character to face the merchant. So that's what we'll do right now. So if we jump back in, back into our code here, we're gonna do a couple of things. So we're gonna track a few things. Just like to do do that, so I'll put that on there. Technically, I should be doing the underline part too, but apparently we're skipping that. So the first thing we're going to do is check to see if we're moving. And if we're moving, basically, if we need to rotate. So the reason I'm calling it and needs rotation is because if we click somewhere, but we're not going towards an NPC, technically we're moving, but we don't need to rotate. We don't care what direction the character's facing. It's really they need to face just whatever direction they're coming in at. So it's fine. So we're not always going to need to worry about rotation. The other thing we're going to do is we need to track where it is that we want to rotate to, because we're going to pass this into a method that's going to actually handle our rotation. So coming back into our code, I'm going to do a couple of things. So when we click on the NPC, that's when we're going to turn, and that's actually really where we're going to set our NPC to view. And we can get that from our hit. So our hit has a notion of whatever transform, which we can also dig into the game object specs, based off of what we clicked. So we can just pull the transform out of what it is that our raycast hit, and then feed that into our NPC to view for us to access later. And then what we'll do is start the movement, and then we're going to set this to true. Now, this is going to come into play inside of our update method. We're going to have a check for this. And I'm wrapping this in a check because you want to be very careful when you're doing update loops that you're not calling too many things needless. So I could do, I could basically do this rotation check, and it's going to just, nothing's really going to happen when it hits the rotation because it'll be done. So there won't be anything new to look at. But I don't want to constantly ping and do the calculation for that check if I don't have to. Otherwise, it just kind of bogs down the system. It can definitely add up and take out your game in terms of performance. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a new method called rotateTorts. And in this method, we're going to do a few complicated things. So we're going to check for the NPC to view. Normalized. So basically what we're doing is we're establishing our direction. Which way is it that we're trying to look? And then we're going to do quarter ion. I totally called it quaternion. Quaternion. Always get made fun of for that. I don't know why. I look at it and I think it should be pronounced differently than it really is. What we're going to do is we're going to call a method called lookRotation. And so quaternions are useful in that they'll help you with rotation and orientation. So Unity as a whole has basically two ways that you can essentially deal with it. With rotation and orientation. So one is quaternion, excuse me, and the other one is Euler angles. So they each have their pros and cons. The recommended way that you work with rotation and orientation is through the quaternion. And the Euler angles, while you can access them, they actually can have some significant drawbacks. So Euler angles are the simpler representation. They're the ones that show the X, Y, and Z values. So when you look at the inspector inside of Unity and you see these three values, you're looking at the Euler angles because it's a little bit easier, more simple to represent. So they suffer when you edit the properties from something called a gimbal lock. So basically what that is when you're applying three rotations, it's possible for the first and the second to result in the third axis pointing the same direction as the others, which basically kills the kind of degrees of freedom in that the third rotation value won't be applied on a unique axis. So you can basically have just unpredictable experiences when working directly with those. Now, quaternions, on the other hand, so they represent the orientation or rotation of the object. And the goal with how Unity has kind of wrapped it up is that you never modify the individual X, Y, and Z properties, but instead you end up using kind of helper methods or helper, I guess, methods or functions, if you will, one of those being the one that we're looking at, which is this look rotation. So we're actually going to work with look rotation. Angle is another one which will allow us to do a calculation. And then we're going to do something called slurping, which I'll describe as we start to hit that point. The nice thing about quaternions is they do not suffer from gimbal lock. So that scenario that I described won't happen. But the thing that's not so good about them is that they can't represent a rotation that exceeds 180 degrees in either direction, whereas the Euler angles can. So there's drawbacks to both, and Unity has a set of documentation and best practices. They even have a link to it in the video, but they even have a section that describes kind of bad practices that you can end up doing with either one. Okay, so jumping back in. So again, we have the look rotation. So we're grabbing basically the direction. And then what we're going to do is we're actually going to do the rotation. And we're going to do that with, I kind of alluded to it, with the slurping rotation. Then, oh, and I need to define speed. So speed is basically just essentially how quickly we're going to be rotating. So we're going to make it so we can pass in a value, and that way we can kind of mess with it if we don't like what it's set to. You can actually even make this a little bit more generic in that you could pass in the object to look at through it instead of setting it like I am up above. So for example, if you wanted to make the merchant also rotate back, you'd probably make this a little bit more generic so that you can maybe call it as like a helper method on either side. So you know, maybe pass in the object that you want to rotate as one parameter, the object that you're looking at in another parameter, and then of course I'd still probably do the speed so that you can kind of tweak it depending on what you're looking at. So you can make it a little bit more generic, which is a hint towards a challenge I'm going to give you towards the end of the video here. So let's see. So we have this. So basically what this is going to do. So slurping is something I hadn't really talked about yet. And basically what that stands for is a spherical linear interpolation. And basically what that means is because we're calling this an update, so this is going to happen every frame, each time we're going to slowly continue to rotate towards our object. So it'll be kind of a slow thing. And I think I could probably, thinking if there's a good way to demo that. You'll see it rotate. I guess what we can do is just remove the condition so that it checks as false. And basically what you just see is this would trigger once, and it would maybe, like if we called it once, you'd move like slightly, but then it wouldn't continue because it's a check that you need to actually have every single frame in order to create kind of like a smooth animation, if you will. So what we can do is illustrate the next thing that I want to show you. So we'll call this, and we're going to rotate to float. So we'll go, and what I think I'll do, I'm going to do a debug log. I'm thinking we'll do, so what you can do is you can check the angle between two rotations, essentially. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to debug out the angle that's between our transform, so our player and their rotation, and then the one that we're basically our target look rotation. You can kind of see, so we haven't shut this off. So this is going to continue to run every single frame because we've set it to true, but we haven't actually turned it to false. And that's okay because I want to kind of illustrate this, the fact that it would run as frequently as it will. So notice a couple things here. I have collapse, which basically means any like messages are going to collapse into a single line item, and you'll see this number kind of go up. So with that on, when I click on this, you can see this stuff printing out. This is our angle check. And it went down to basically, as you can see, it's shifting between these two every single frame. So I'll go ahead and pause it. You can see she rotated. Mission accomplished there. But what's happening is, again, it's getting called every single update frame. And if you're not careful and you do this a lot, it'll, like I said, bog down performance of your game. This isn't a check that we need to have constantly running. And the reason that check is running is because we're not really doing a check to say, hey, are we done rotating? Which is ultimately the point of this here. So we can just add that pretty simply, actually using this debug log that we did. So what we learned from what was being printed out was once we hit below, once we hit below one, we've pretty much arrived, right? At that point, it's if we haven't fully rotated, it's so minute that it really just doesn't matter. So we can just do the check to see if the angle is less than one, and if it is, just turn this back to false. We can see that she doesn't trigger. So really what we want to do is a distance check in addition to this. We want to make sure that we've reached our target. That the rotation has been completed. So you can do this by doing a vector3.distance and then passing in two to calculate. So we have, let's see here, it's our transform.position and then our mpc2view.position. And then because I checked this a little bit earlier, I happen to know that we want to check under 8. But really what you could do is just debug, log this out, and watch kind of where it is going. So basically, we're doing two checks. Is our rotation complete? And then this will solve if our character is kind of loosely pointing towards it, but we're nowhere near it. And then this also confirms that we've reached our right distance. So we push play and we click on our merchant. We'll see if she gets to it, she navigates, and she's looking kind of at the character. So that's ultimately the type of logic that we wanted for this particular episode. So we're going to go ahead and stop here. And in the next one, we'll start to move towards building out the inventory system since we have our character kind of walking up to it. So I had some folks kind of ask for challenges or things to kind of go and explore on your own. So the challenge for this one that I'll give you is, I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but it's getting the merchant to also rotate back and look at the character. So the methods that we took a look at today would basically aid in that. So all on the GitHub repo, when I go to post this project, I'll actually post how I would solve the problem. So you can go and take a look at that if you, I guess, are curious in how I did it, or if you're stuck and just want to take a look. So thanks for joining. See you next time.